Good day, Internet.
Good day, Internet.
Good day, Internet.
Hello, Internet.
Yeah. Hello, Internet.
Hello.
How are you?
How's everybody doing today?
I'm good. I'm pleased to be hanging out with you guys.
Well, we're so happy to have you, Charlotte. Rob, how are you doing?
I was struggling, y'all. I had a blue screen of death right before the show.
So you go into
scramble mode. Is this going to come back up, or do I have to go grab another laptop and hook everything back up to it? So fortunately, I'm using my regular tech.
It wasn't a vibe. I'm pleased to meet Rob, though. I've never got to hang out with Rob before.
Oh, so you guys haven't met before.
This is the first time we've been on the show together.
Rob,
nice to meet you.
No, this is nice. We get to hang out. I'm here for this. We've displaced Tom. The ladies are taking over. We're outnumbered.
Yeah,
we're outnumbering.
Yeah. Roger's here to take notes. So, you know.
Wait, what?
Teacher's pet.
Take notes.
I'm being silly. Rob, we are sorry about the blue screen of death.
Never
having been in that moments before a show before, multiple times, I know how frustrating it may be, but we're glad you're here now.
No one needs a blue screen of death ever.
We really don't.
Who's ready to do a show about tech?
All right, let's do this. I will count myself in. In 3, 2. This 10th year of Daily Tech News Show is made possible by its listeners. Thanks to all of you, including Johnny Hernandez, High Tech Oki, and Jim Hart. Also, a special thanks to lifetime supporter, Chap. We see you, Chap. We raise you a chap. On this episode of DTNS, Dropbox says no more unlimited cloud storage. Some people are very upset about that. Apple VR patent timelines are curious. And Charlotte Henry is here to tell us why CNN Max is better than CNN Plus. Or is it? This is the Daily Tech News for Thursday, August 24th, 2023. From Studio Revolver, Sarah Lane.
From Columbus, Ohio, I'm Rob Dunwood.
I'm the show's producer, Roger Chang.
And joining us today is Charlotte Henry of the Edition newsletter and frequent guest on the show. Charlotte, so glad to have you back.
I'm so pleased to be back. And I'm always blown away when you introduce the show as being in the 10th year. Because I'm like, oh, yeah, it's Tom and Sarah's new show. And it's like, nope, been doing this bad boy for a decade. We've been
weirdly
for
enough,
a decade.
I sometimes feel the same way.
I'm proud of 10? You guys. I love it. It's what we need.
Yeah. Well, we'd love to have you. You're going to make the show better. And speaking of shows, let's get right into it, starting with the quick hits. Due to the artificial intelligence boom, NVIDIA has more than doubled its current quarter revenue of $13.51 billion over the same period last year of $6.7 billion. Wow. That is absolutely crushing markets' estimates. Gaming products rose 22% with the release of the RTX 4060 GPU, Avatar Cloud Engine, and the increase of games using DLSS. But NVIDIA's AI and data center segment skyrocketed, up 171% on the year. That includes its H100 GPUs and the HGX box that combines 8 of those into one single computer. NVIDIA is showing no signs of slowing down. Feeling pretty good about its next quarter, projecting another rise to $16 billion in revenue.
In a surprise move, Apple sent a letter to California State Senator Susan Talamantes Eggman in support of SB 244, a right to repair bill being considered in California. The bill is similar to the one that went into effect in Minnesota in May and requires manufacturers to offer a means to diagnose, maintain, and repair products. In the letter, Apple expresses its support on the grounds of offering consumers the ability to repair their devices safely without risking privacy or data issues.
Boy, a lot of people very excited about this Apple news today. Not the first company to do it, but certainly it's a big company to do it.
And it's been moving in that direction, but it's interesting it's embracing it in other places.
Indeed. Speaking of big companies, Meta released code generation tool called Code Llama, built on its Llama 2 large language model, which will generate new code and debug human-written work. Code Llama uses the same license as Llama 2, which makes it free for research and commercial use by small to medium-sized companies. So, you know, a Microsoft, not no, but, you know, maybe Sarah and Rob and Charlotte's company. Sure. Code Llama comes in three sizes, the smallest, smallest of which can run on a single GPU. So pretty small.
It appears that hardware maker MSI inadvertently leaked details on Intel's yet-to-be-announced 14th generation desktop processors in a now-taken-down video on MSI's website. The video said the 14th gen processors will be 3% faster than the 13th gen with a 17% rise for multi-thread workloads. It also showed info indicating the Core i7-14700K would increase performance cores from 8 to 12. The video said the 14th gen chips will work on existing Z690 and Z790 motherboards. Intel is expected to officially announce the 14th gen processors during Innovation 2023 next month.
Walmart is adding drone deliveries to two Texas area superstores later this year. Wing, which is the Alphabet-owned drone firm, says that the two offerings will cover a combined 60,000 homes in the greater Dallas-Fort Worth metroplex. Customers within a six-mile radius of a Walmart in Frisco, Texas, and a second location nearby will be able to have small items delivered by Wing drones starting in a couple of weeks. And those are the quick hits. All right. So you might not have ever gotten that data limit email from Dropbox saying that your Dropbox account is about to hit its limit. And that might have been because the online data storage company has always had an unlimited option, which you pay for, and then you never have to deal with these sorts of things until now. Dropbox announced on Thursday that a small amount of users were using so much data that the company had potential, or they had potential, to degrade the company's cloud service for other Dropbox clients. Dropbox has a highest tier, all the space you need storage plan that will now be capped at around 5 terabytes per user for new customers. That's per month. Now, for many people, not an issue. Oh my gosh, like how are we using all this stuff? Some users say, ooh, actually it is, because I'm backing up all sorts of things on Dropbox. The plan was designed for businesses. However, some clients were using that fire hose for things like cryptocurrency mining, sharing storage, even reselling that storage. So here's what's going on now. Dropbox has 8 million paying users, some of whom need a lot of storage. Back in May, Google removed its as much storage as you need product branding for its highest tier workspace plan, very similar to what Dropbox currently offers. And Google at the time sent some people to Dropbox as a result. Customers have posted on forums about being told that they've exceeded storage limits, need to pay for additional capacity. Some discussed moving to Dropbox after receiving such warnings. But Dropbox says a new surge of this activity in the wake of other services making similar policy changes changed their tune. Right, Rob?
Yeah, so Dropbox's new plan knows that every new terabyte will cost $8 per month compared to the previous as much space as you need a plan at $24 per month. Current users with less than 35 terabytes, which is almost everyone on that plan, will be able to keep their current storage at the same price for 5 years. Those exceeding 35 terabytes will be contacted to discuss a range of options. If I were a person at 35 terabytes, I would be really, really upset about this because I was paying for unlimited, and unlimited used to actually mean unlimited. Guess it doesn't mean that anymore.
Exactly. I think that's a really good point. It's like if you're in the 30, you're moving 35 TBs per month type thing, then okay, maybe it's not unlimited, but you're not expecting to be capped. And the company being like, you know what? Hold on a second. There's a few of you who are really, you know, going a little rogue on this whole situation. And because of that, everyone else now has to pay more. I mean, it's sort of a company thing. What do you think, Charlotte?
I mean, I'm sitting here thinking how I could possibly use 35 terabytes of data, and probably most of the answers we shouldn't say on this show. I can totally imagine why there's a backlash to this, because on the face of it, you are no longer getting the thing you thought you were paying for. I'd be fascinated to know how many users this actually affects. My guess is it's a very, very small
number. A very small number. Mm-hmm.
Well, my guess is that, like, also most normals don't need anywhere near 5 terabytes. I think I have 2 terabytes of storage, and I'm not really a normal user by any stretch of the imagination. I'm creating media, I'm storing stuff on Dropbox, and I don't think I'm anywhere near my 2 terabyte limit. I'm just struggling to see how many people this is affecting and whether it's a really legitimate complaint.
It's a small amount of people, and I don't know exactly, you know, the crypto stuff, I understand that that's probably a situation. I don't know that much about that. What I can tell you is that I know somebody who went from, it's not me.
Asking for a friend.
From Google to Dropbox because of the unlimited thing that Google capped somewhat recently, just a couple of months ago. This is somebody who's running a Plex server. This is a Plex server that is dealing with many terabytes of data per month. This is not necessarily anything illegal. It just happens to be a lot of data that's being moved around.
Oh,
I sent this person the story this morning saying, is this an issue? And they were like, oh, no.
There's a couple of things to pick up on, though, right? So Rob said that you can still get as much data as you want. You just have to pay for it.
Like, that's what we were doing before.
You do.
That's what we were doing before. Yeah, that's how I look at it, because I can see legitimate reasons and legitimate ways of how you could use that much data if you were going into it with the thought that I have unlimited data. So I get that, you know, people are going to have to pay for it now. But as I said, if I'm not near that, but I can easily get the 5 terabytes for some of the things that I do. So I would feel some kind of way about no longer having that unlimited option as an option.
I'm looking forward to the startup that offers a new unlimited plan, because someone's on their way.
I mean, I recently moved, on my Verizon mobile plan from something that was like supposedly unlimited to like less unlimited, but it actually made more sense for me price wise. So, yeah, sure. I'm with you, Rob. Like, sometimes these things don't. I mean, OK, tell me what my new option is. But yes, I think what's going on here. A lot of crypto mining, a lot of, you know, behind the scenes stuff. And Dropbox has gone the way of Google, saying we're not going to pay for this anymore because some of you are just using that many terabytes per month.
So let's talk about everybody's favorite things, Apple patents. Apple was recently granted a few new patents. Curiously, even though Apple only announced its Vision Pro augmented reality headset this year, for release in 2024, the company has been working on a product of this kind since, well, before the first iPhone. A newly published patent for a virtual reality headset was granted to Apple, and the application date is May 7th, 2007. That's before the first iPhone, the original iPhone, the one that was just called the iPhone. Mm-hmm. So, could Apple's VR concept really have been in the works for 16 years?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, let's talk about this, but wait. First, there's more. A second patent of note was for a digital stone. Hard to know exactly what a digital stone is supposed to be in the minds of Apple, but it is described in the patent as a small, portable physical object for use in an extended reality system. The system may include a device that uses that allows a user or wearer to interact with virtual representations of content, such as stored data and other applications overlaid on the user's physical environment. Okay, so basically that sounds like something to make virtual objects physical while wearing the headset and then move them around in the real world, but we don't really know. So, is it a hard drive? Is that where data is coming from? Is it a pet rock? Charlotte, what do you think a digital stone is?
I mean, yes, maybe it's all those things. The patent doesn't exactly make it clear, as patents I want to do sometimes. Obviously, this was Apple thinking back, you know, back in the day before we really know what AR, VR, the metaverse, the phrase didn't exist at that time. I think it's a kind of interesting example of Apple being quite a forward-thinking and innovative company. You know, the fact that, as Rob said, this VR headset, whatever that was at the time, was before even the iPhone existed. Obviously, Apple had seen other kind of smart and smartphone devices at that time and was maybe looking ahead. I'd be fascinated to know as well what competitor companies were looking at and doing in this space. I'm sure it wasn't only Apple, but we all take more interest in Apple patents than lots of other companies. So no, I don't think it's a pet rock. I'm sort of imagining a device, when we go back to that digital stone, that kind of laid out the kind of boundaries of a digital virtual reality area. Maybe it was something like that.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know, Rob. I mean, I could see almost the way that I would, you know, consider like a YubiKey or something. Like,
yeah.
Here is a representation of something that is physical and I have, but then wearing the VR headset, it can represent something else, but I need it in order for the rest of it to work. What do you think?
I don't know. I'm kind of thinking of like you're playing virtual chess and you just want to have the tactile feel of moving your chess piece. So there's something you can pick up in the real world, but as you're looking at it through your virtual headset, it looks like the thing that you're interacting with in the virtual world, and you're literally able to physically move that thing back and forth. That's kind of what thought, you know, popped into my head. But honestly, we really don't have any clue as to what this is going to be. But I'm sure people are going to speculate over the coming weeks until something actually comes out.
I also, as you two are talking about this, I'm also thinking, what a fuss Apple made when it announced the Vision Pro, of that there was nothing you held on to compared to lots of other VR products. So it's kind of interesting that there's a pattern for something that clearly is physical and can be held or moved in some way, because that was a really big deal in the Vision Pro, wasn't it? That you didn't
have to touch and hold something. As a Quest user of, you know, every Quest that has been offered up until now, I mean, I'm used to using my controllers. Sometimes they look like lightsabers, you know, but like you need them in order to do things. You can do sort of pinch and touch with hands. I don't think it's ever worked very well, at least not for me. But yeah, that whole idea of like, okay, so you don't have a controller, but there is maybe a place, a rock, as it's described as stone, to, you know, unlock all sorts of things. I don't know. I'm not in the market for Vision Pro because it's a dev.
Because you saw the price.
And the price. And, you know, it's not even happening until next year. But I'm excited to see if something comes from this. At the same time, Apple had a patent for a VR headset in 2007. So, you know. You can imagine the company being like, listen, let's just get the patent. The hardware needs to catch way up. But let's do this.
And that's
16 years later, we'll have a working model.
Yeah, and that's not such a weird thing for patents. Like, that is often how these things work.
Indeed. Well, we like to think of our patrons as patents. You know, once we have you, we hope you stay forever. Thanks to everybody who became patrons and increased their pledges recently because of your support. We can bring Molly Wood on the show one Friday every other month. Molly is the best. We would like to see Molly more. To reach our goal of having Molly on one Friday every month, we need a bit more help. If you haven't already, consider supporting the show by visiting patreon.com/DTNS. All right. So CNN announced today it's going to launch a 24/7, all live, all the time, streaming news service called CNN Max on September 27th. CNN's press release adds that it'll be part of an open beta for news experimentation that will take input from the Max community. CNN Max will be available across all of Max subscription tiers.
listeners might remember that Warner Brothers Discovery killed CNN Plus 16 months ago, less than a month after it launched. CNN Plus was an online-only subscription streaming service that focused on CNN personality-driven shows. CNN Max will not be a streaming version of the CNN channel, but will feature some of the tentpole shows from the network, like Anderson Cooper 360, The Lead with Jake Tapper, Amin Poor, and The Situation Room with Wolf Blitzer. So, Charlotte, what is it this time? You know, what is CNN Max this time? How's it different than CNN Plus?
Well, obviously Max is bigger than CNN Plus, isn't it, Rob? You know, you can tell it's bigger and better because of the name. I think this is a much more compelling offering, actually, isn't it? Because I think what people want is access to news and information. And that was like, CNN Plus was a bit of a weird mismatch of like, Anderson Cooper talking about his family, and then some, like, it was a bit weird. When people think of CNN, they think of hard news, right? Mostly, and some documentaries. And it was kind of a bit of a weird mismatch, and it didn't really make sense. The fact that they cut it off, I think, was not very good. If you read Sarah Fisher's story in Axios, who broke this before CNN actually announced it, that was, she points out, it was very bad for morale. The dropping of CNN Plus so quickly, and obviously it cost people their jobs and so on and so forth. But it is trying to compete with the streaming offers from others, MSNBC, obviously Now, NBC Now, Fox News does streaming stuff as well, doesn't it? So it's obviously trying to compete with those clear rivals. I was kind of thinking how different this is also to what streaming news is like in the UK. So like, the BBC, you just go to the BBC iPlayer and you can watch the BBC News channel. It's just there for free. Sky News actually puts loads of, has a stream of its news as well. It's embedded in the app. It's embedded on its website. Pretty easy to access for free. So it seems more complicated in the US. I guess that's because of cable bundles and stuff. And obviously one of the things Warner Brothers Discovery, the people that now run CNN, are keen to have is younger viewers watching CNN, because we know that young people just do not watch cable news, do they? They're too busy watching DTNS. But what that means is that they're not buying cable bundles, so you've got to get some value and money out of them some way. So there's obviously going to be advertising on CNN Max. They might look at some kind of ad tech solutions to do better targeted ad as time goes on. I think that idea of a open beta is really interesting as well. They're not pretending that this is the final finished product and what's perfect for their viewers straight off the bat. They're not pretending that anymore. And we should say it's a section within the Max app now.
You know, I think you make a really good point, Charlotte, that, you know, CNN Max is at least, you know, front facing, saying, you know what? Give us some feedback. Let us know how we're doing. Yeah. We're all just about news for you. Even though CNN Plus was supposedly more of that, but it was sort of more, I think, I never actually watched it.
And, there you go.
You know, a lot of people didn't because it came and went within a month. But, you know, it was more of sort of like the CNN personalities and, you know, more of that, you know, less breaking news and more of the, you know, the CNN stuff that most people, some people at least would care about. When we're in the situation where we have so many ways to get streaming content, whether it be part of a cable package or, you know, a la carte kind of thing, I wonder how much CNN Max is going to thrive. I don't think it's a terrible idea. In fact, as somebody who pays for YouTube TV, because I don't even watch it. I don't even watch anything that's sort of like cable network-esque things. But maybe there's an earthquake. I might go to CNN, right, you know, or some other news channel type thing. To have something like that at my disposal that's less sort of lifestyle stuff and more...
natural news. You know,
yeah, exactly. You know, I don't exactly know what it's going to look like. Rob, what are your thoughts on this?
So I actually think that CNN Max may have a shot, unlike CNN Plus did, because the problem with Plus was that the demographic that you're going after, they're not buying CNN. If they were going to do that, they would have just watched cable. Mm-hmm. So to have another service that wasn't the same content that you even got on the thing they already weren't watching was just a bridge too far. I think with this, though, the fact that it's coming with something that literally millions of people already have, folks will get to kind of play around with it and see, oh, okay, yeah, I actually kind of like that. Oh, I like that thing that wasn't regular Anderson Cooper, that was a little bit something different. I think it's just it's giving people the opportunity to kind of test it out before they go and feel like they have to buy yet another service.
Yeah, and we should say there's going to be 4 hours of every day of original programming. I think it's basically because there's contractual agreements. You can't just shove the CNN in America international feed onto a streaming service. So there is going to be 4 hours that is different from your normal CNN. So I think that could be quite compelling for certain viewers as well. And also, we do have to talk about that cord kill element. If people are just not buying cable bundles, but are paying for Max, say, this is a way to get them to watch CNN where they might not have just watched it before. And that's really what it comes down to, a tech solution to getting people to watch an old format of media.
Yeah, that is a good way to look at it. I'm sure CNN is hoping that many people will say, we want this.
They really
exactly
need
what
it to Shirley work.
Described. Well, another thing that people want is concrete. You might say, how much do they want concrete? Actually, quite a bit. People make about 4.4 billion tons of concrete every year. You're building new stuff, your land sidewalks. Concrete is very important. It involves, though, needing 8 billion tons of sand, and that's caused some concrete shortages in recent years. You know what else humans generate a lot of, though? Coffee. People love coffee, and that creates coffee grounds, and the coffee grounds mostly become trash. However, a team of researchers from Australia's RMIT University School of Engineering have discovered coffee grounds, when used properly, can be used as a silica substitute in the concrete production process, offering significantly stronger chemical bonds that sand alone, which is part of what makes, that's sort of the basis of concrete, gives coffee grounds a purpose beyond landfills. The process is a little involved. Pyrolyzing the materials at 350 to 500 degrees Celsius, then substituting them for sand in 5, 10, 15, and 20 percentages, that's by volume, for standard concrete mixtures. So, to the outsider, you might say, I don't really know what's going on. Anybody who knows concrete knows that that is actually a stronger concrete, which is something that will be more sellable. The study was published in the September issue of Journal of Cleaner Production.
That's more about concrete than I've ever learned.
Same.
Ever in my life. So thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah, well, it wasn't me. Thank the folks at RMIT University School of Engineering. But yeah, I don't know, Charlotte, Rob, if y'all are coffee drinkers. I'm not a huge one, but I throw out coffee grounds pretty often, and I've never really thought about how to repurpose them in a way that would make, our cities safer.
Sarah, I'm in England. I drink tea. Come on.
I drank coffee once in 1982.
Oh, Sarah. Really?
I think I was nine.
I'm the coffee
that's all I
person
needed.
That cares about this the most. Got it. That's
Sarah's
fine.
Contributing to the future of concrete. That's what we've learned.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Sarah is the
next
real
time
hero
you see a cement
show.
Truck, you say to them, have you heard about the coffee grounds? Heard it on DTNS. All right, Rob, let's talk about COBOL in our mailbag today.
So Andrew had thoughts on yesterday's story about COBOL translation using AI, and he writes, As a Java developer, I never would have wanted to take on modernizing COBOL alone, but I could see a tool like this making it more manageable. But I think the current COBOL developers will get the most out of it, as they'll already understand their systems and be able to learn Java as the translation happens. It actually points to a good learning path for developers as new languages come out and their older systems can be translated to keep up with new tech. It also underscores the need to keep good software engineering practices like automated testing so that everyone can trust the new system will work like the old one. IBM mentioned this as well as the first step listed to modernizing COBOL, as it is refactoring it to a high enough quality to be translatable.
Aw, Andrew, this is so great. What a good point. For anybody who is unfamiliar with COBOL, and we talked about it on yesterday's show, I mean, this is legacy code that goes back to 1959. It's old.
Yeah, I'm familiar with it. I don't know if I've ever said this on this show, but very, very first real job with benefits out of college was working for a consulting firm where I basically was looking at COBOL and Fortran for Y2K errors, basically going debugging for dates. This is like in 96 before Y2K.
Wow. So you were doing that 4 years before at least someone had the foresight to be like, we might have a problem.
There was there's a lot of mainframe stuff that was written with like, this works until 99. And, they just didn't think about having to have 2000 in it. And, the thought that was going to break Earth. If we didn't get all this stuff debugged.
I'm having real millennium bug flashbacks. I'm just pleased that Rob saved the planet, really.
Yeah, thank you, Rob. Appreciate thank that. And also, thank you, Andrew, for writing in and saying, this is something that affects me, and this is something that I think will affect other people, and potentially in a good way. If you have anything that you would like to give us feedback about that we talk about on the show, something we might talk about on a future show, please do send it our way, feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. Charlotte Henry, thank you so much for being with us today. Let folks know what you've been up to these days.
No, thanks for having me. I love doing these additional conversations with you. Head over to theaddition.net. You can find blogging. You can sign up to the newsletter there. If you want to head over to newsletter.theaddition.net and you can just sign up straight away for the newsletter. It goes out twice a week. Have a podcast with some really great guests, also called The Addition, that goes out once a week as well. So I'd love for you to come and hang out with me there.
Well, we're happy to have you hang out with us. And Charlotte will be popping up around these parts more often than not. And we're so happy to have you. Thank you again, Charlotte. Speaking of people that we very much care about and love, that's our patrons. Stick around for our extended show, Good Day Internet. If you're a patron, you get the show. It's a new era at Netflix. Have you heard the good word? We're going to talk about where all those DVDs are going, or maybe not going. But just a reminder, you can catch our show live Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern, 2000 UTC. You can find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live. We're back doing it all again tomorrow with Chris Ashley joining us and Lynn Peralta on the Top Tech Stories. Talk to you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Good show, everyone.
Great show. Great show.
Wasn't that enjoyable?
Thank you. Thank you. We're all, let's pat ourselves on the back, shall
for
we?
For sure.
If you're
especially
listening to the show and you say
education.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we're here for you. If you're listening to the show and thinking, oh gosh, I've got the best idea for a title, you know what you should do? Go on over to showbot.tv/DTNS2 and vote on some DTNS titles that have already been submitted.
Can I just say, the titles are my favorite bit always of being on. People come up, your listeners come up with such good stuff.
We really do. Yeah.
There is some good stuff. Even the ones that don't make it as the show title. It's good stuff.
No, it's great fun. Yeah. There have been times where I'm like, All right, everybody, let's just pick a title. And we can't because there's so many good ones. Everybody's very clever. Yeah, whether you want to just peruse or join the fun, you can do so at showbot.tv/GTNS2. We're looking at some of those, Rob, tell us more about this whole Netflix thing.
Well, yeah, on Monday, Netflix announced on the social network X that Netflix DVD subscribers would not be charged for any discs they still possess after the service shuts down on September 29th. This follows Netflix's earlier messaging that it may send customers 10 extra discs to their DVD queues. Kind of makes me wish that I still had the DVDs coming to the house. But I stopped that years and years and years ago.
So I went when we knew that Charlotte was coming on the show, and we knew that Charlotte would know a lot about this because she talked about it for the edition. I don't know if we were live or not. It was like 2 days ago, but I admitted to everybody I never actually had the DVD service. I also like never went to Blockbuster. I don't know how I was watching movies back in the day. I don't know. I figured something else out, but I never had a Netflix subscription before streaming.
I feel like DVD.com was not a thing in the UK. I might be wrong. I'm sure there must have been a way you could get DVDs from Netflix in the UK. I have very clear like going to Blockbuster memories as a child. Mm-hmm. I remember that. I think DVD, what year did DVD.com launch? Like 97? So I was like 10 when that started. 9 or 10.
I don't even remember that URL being talked right. about.
Yeah, I guess it was called.
I don't think it's the UK specifically. I mean, maybe I'm just out of the loop, but.
Because if you go, I kind of like this way of they're like, well, we could do. I like a big stock clearance, or we could get some really good PR and DVDs.
They're getting both because you figure if you know they pay for that shipping to send those DVDs back to them. So if they don't have to do that, they probably save a little bit of money there. But I'm thinking, you know, I was a huge user of Netflix, and there was a time when I probably was getting a DVD or two every single day. I would get so many that I wouldn't even watch them and send them back without even watching them. And you know, I remember another true story. My wife actually used to work for Netflix, and she worked for Flixster. You guys remember when Netflix spun out the DVD portion of the company Flixster for about 15 or 20 minutes, and then they decided we decided that's not a good idea, and then they had to bring that back in. But yeah, we got DVDs in the mail literally every single day for years, because it was just we had the service and it was just easy to do. And even though, you know, when we started moving to the time when you could stream, you were just sucking a bunch of bandwidth to do it. And just watching movies online just wasn't as clear as watching them on DVD. So yeah, I was a huge fan, but I can't remember. It has been probably over a decade or more since I last got a DVD from Netflix.
I also, I mean, this is not something I've had a conversation with anybody about all that recently, but like there have been, I don't know, maybe like it's movie night at a friend's house and they're like,
yeah,
I have to send these things back. You know, it's like a library book, right? Where you're like, mm-hmm. I don't exactly know what's going to happen to me, but I know that this is wrong. I need to send these back, you know, but I'm being lazy and I can't. And Netflix being like, we don't really want them. Yeah, just keep them.
They definitely,
it probably
definitely
has like more to do with physical storage space than anything else, right? Like Netflix doesn't want them. Like, where do they get them?
They can't.
They don't
want
to pay the postage
warehouse.
Either.
No. Yeah, that's why I said earlier that the postage is not insignificant to ship back. Probably, I would imagine that we're talking about hundreds of thousands of DVDs that are, you know, that would have to be shipped back that now don't. They would also have to figure out how to dispose of them. They no longer have to do that. So they're definitely saving themselves a few dollars in the end by not having to receive those things back and just allowing their customers to keep them. And it makes the customers feel good, because I would imagine that those customers right now are ordering the best movies that they can think of that they will basically have on DVD until those DVDs degrade.
I already tried that, and I can tell you a lot of the good ones are gone or not.
Oh, interesting.
Oh, because it's not like, oh, we don't carry this title anymore. It's we don't have a physical copy of that
like,
title anymore.
Like at any one time, they maybe had 30 or 50 copies. And then, you know, the whole idea is that instead of having 1,000, you would have like maybe, you know, under 100 and you just constantly hand them out, right? Like a revolving door. But after a while, the door got stuck and the old ones didn't come back in.
Physical media. Look, you can see the stacks of CDs behind me. I just can't ever imagine getting a physical disc of a movie, just go through the multitude of streaming services.
I'm surprised they didn't go the Blockbuster route. And when Blockbuster was kind of... they used to, before they actually closed up shop and they had their fire sales, they used to offer a lot of their old discs for sale. So you could buy a previewed... And unlike a car, I mean, as long as the DVD plays, it doesn't matter, like, you know, 20 people already, you know, touched it or whatever. And so it was a really cheap way to get movies.
For a DVD, like, what would it matter if anyone else had
exactly.
touched
the physical? I bought like five or six movies for like $7 or $8 because they were just like, yeah, we got too many of these movies. It's like, well, you know what? By the time I paid for it, it comes out to like a little under $2 a disc. I'll have been able to watch a movie for like a buck and change. Seems like a good trade off. You know, it's just a way to kill a weekend.
I mean, when I say that I was never a Blockbuster customer, it wasn't because I didn't like the idea. When I went to college for the first time, the only time that I was in college, there was a Blockbuster near SF State. In fact, Roger, you and I were probably there around the same time. There were several of them. I never saw one before because I lived in a small town. We just didn't have things like that. So the whole kind of like go buy a thing, take it home, watch it, bring it back was familiar to me as far as like mom and pop VHS stores. But you know,
that was a thing.
Yeah.
Like people who like as their business.
Oh yeah.
Just like have like a rental store.
Every town had one.
I'm in London.
You had to have one, right? Yeah. There was no kind of like online place to like get something magically delivered to you. You just
went
to the movie theater.
I never had a Blockbuster account because I didn't rent movies. I only bought movies. And the only reason I bought movies is because I used to go in there to buy their games. Because when Blockbuster used to rent out like PlayStation and whatever games, they would also sell them after a period of time. And you could get a game for like, you know, instead of going to like, what's the store?
GameStop.
GameStop. Instead of going to GameStop, you just go to Blockbuster. They would sell you the used game. It would be like 40-50% off, you know, off what you would pay for retail. It's like, whatever. It has the instruction. It doesn't come in the original case. So what? You know, it plays and I can play through it.
Yeah, if you're not a collector, you just want to play it.
Yeah, it's like, does it matter? I just saved myself 50%. When you're a student, you know, you're not exactly raking it in, even working at the Olive Garden, as I did. So, watching your coins was very important.
I was in the same boat as you, Roger. I didn't really rent. It was more my parents that rented from the VHS store. And it wasn't Blockbuster. It was the mom and pop store that just opened up in your city or your town. Yeah. And we had a couple, you know, from a relatively small town. So we had a couple, and they were usually like in a strip mall with a laundromat and a, you know, insurance agency, stuff like that. They were just, you know, just the mom and pop, you know, you go in and they got a bunch of videos that you could get. So I never had that, but I did get the Blockbuster account to get the games, because I was like you, with the exception of games like, and this is way back in the day. So like, Tecmo Bowl and Madden and stuff like that, to where I was going to play those games over and over and over again. I really didn't buy games. I would just go to Blockbuster, get the game, play the game until I beat the game, then take it back to Blockbuster and get another game and come back and do the same thing. It made no sense to, you know, why go spend $35 on a game when you could just rent it for $7-$8 from Blockbuster, play it, and then return it?
And it was a great way to try out games. Like, do I really want to? I mean, even back then, like a brand new game was $49 back in the late 90s. I am not going to spend, you know, $50 for a game. Let me rent it, see if I actually, if it's something, because you can read as many magazine reviews of a game as you want, but you never really get an understanding of what it feels like to play or own. And, you know, for certain games like Final Fantasy VII, as I played, it's like, oh, I'm really hooked on it. I'm going to buy the actual game because it's going to take me like a month and a half to finish this game. And probably just cheaper. And it's probably, it has replay value.
And then you can just, it's yours. Do whatever you want with it. I mean, that's the streaming conversation. I mean, I think about that for music. You know, I pay for streaming music. That's the only thing that makes sense to me these days. Because I'm fickle and I don't really want to buy anything anymore. But there, you know, was a point where that's all I did. And we have a lot of folks who listen to DTNS GDI who say, nah, I want to, if I really like something, I want to own it. You know, and maybe Charlotte, it's kind of like the DVDs and CDs behind you. It's not a one size fits all type thing.
I really like, so I pay for Apple One, the highest tier of Apple One, so I get all my music streamed on Apple Music. Great. I haven't bought a CD for a long time, but then I'm thinking, like, I've been listening to a lot of new music. I went to a festival a couple of weeks ago, found some new bands I like. You think, oh, this is a nice way to support them. Do I want to have the physical thing? Yeah, it's quite cool to dip into music and have whatever you want at your disposal. There's something, I was actually here, this will make you laugh, Sarah. I was doing a bit of weekend tidying. I cleared the CD rack, got the duster out. Like, we got rid of, I mean, let's not talk about how many years of dust I had to remove. Started organizing things again. I was like, oh, I remember really being excited about buying this, putting it in for the first time, listening to it. Like, there is something about physical media. And this is definitely me, I think, being old. Because I think, like, younger people will just be like, you don't need to own that. Like, it's fine. Spotify is cool.
I don't know. I mean, if you've never experienced it, there is there's a tactile experience. I mean, you did this, I mean, back in the day when everything was sold on LP, and that's how you got, like...
By the way, there are vinyl records behind there as well.
But, like, going through the liner notes and going through the sheet, like, going through, that's what you did. You looked at the album cover as you listen to the song. It's like, oh, who's on this track?
Sometimes lyrics were involved. Ooh.
Yes.
I mean, that was a bonus. They put the thing like, oh, so all this time I thought they were saying X and really they were saying Y. And there's this whole tactile feedback. What's during the dawn of audio stream, like Spotify, it was still cheaper for me to just go to Amoeba and go through their like used CDs and buy everything for like, you know, $1, $2. For a UCD, and then I would just rip them all, you know, into whatever lossless format I wanted to. And then I would just, you know, have it on rando play on VLC, and then, you know, it'd have my 300 songs. And if I wanted, you know, and then I would have Pandora to the mix if I wanted to listen to music that, you know, I haven't actively tried to search for, where it just throws you suggestions based on what you like. To kind of expose you to stuff and you know, eliminate the whole thing of, oh, I only want to listen from X artist or someone who sounds like X artist. You know, the whole Pandora thing is, these are bands that other people liked who like this band as well. Maybe you'll like them. You can thumbs up, thumbs down.
So yeah. I was having a conversation with my kid that's in college. She's a sophomore in school. And she's like, Dad, I've never owned a CD before. I'm like, that's not possible. You had to have owned one. She's like, no, I've never had a device that could play a CD. Now her older sister.
I'm getting so old.
Her older sister has clearly had CDs, but she's like, Dad, I've never had a CD. Every bit of music that she's ever listened to, that is something that she acquired herself, was you know MP3 based, something that she downloaded off of Spotify, off of Apple, or off of, you know, some other services. But here's the thing. She's actually into albums. She probably has a collection of, I'd say, 25 to 35 albums. So she has an actual record player, and she actually likes going to record stores and going through you know, the old vinyl and picking out records.
Well, there has been a bit of a resurgence. If you look at the data, it shows that, you know, there has been a resurgence in people buying vinyl records. I mean, I love them. I think they sound fabulous. They feel fabulous. It's a great experience. So that doesn't surprise me that she sort of skipped CDs and went to that.
And but the vinyl thing gets a lot of press because people, you know, it's like, wow, you know, look at this old media that's having a resurgence. And there's something to that. I mean, I have a record player. I don't know.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
behind me somewhere. Mm-hmm. You know, don't really use it all that often. But it's, you know, I respect the medium. But your daughter, Rob, you know, the whole idea of like, I want to... I like this artist or this band, you know, the whatever it is. I want to buy this. I want to experience it in the order that was, you know, they hoped that I would like it in. You know, there is something to that. I do that less than I ever had in the past. I mean, I used to, my favorite albums, you know, you listen front to back over and over and over. When's the last time I did that? Not very recently, because I'm a streamer and I'm, you know, I just, I don't know. I care about things in their, you know, sort of precious little, you know, thing that I was supposed to pay $15 for and then have, you know, in its entirety, a lot less, but it still exists. And it's kind of cool that younger people care.
Well, it's interesting you say that because Saray TW writes, my son specifically asked me for CDs and records despite the fact that he didn't have a record or CD player. I just bought the players along with the requested CDs and records. But I think there's an appeal because if you didn't grow up with it, it's sort of a mysterious object, right? It's like there will be a time where people say like, you actually drove the cars yourself? How did you not get it into an accident? I mean, I've been in two. But, you know, there's going to be like a psychological disconnect because it's like, why did you do things that way? And more importantly, how did you do them, right? How did you make calls with a device where you put your finger in a little dial and you made motions and somehow that all connected you to someone on the other side of the country? And how did they know how to charge you, you know, when you didn't have digital technology? How they could measure how long you were on that line?
And now like all I'm things. Thinking of is like that classic thing of how did you ever meet your friends when you didn't have a mobile phone?
Oh yeah. Wait, you just agreed to be somewhere and everyone showed up around that time?
Oh,
so you just hang out?
I think about that constantly. Yeah. If I say like, yes, I will meet you in 30 minutes at the 7-Eleven in between us. And if I just don't show up, they're like, all right. So,
I mean, did you ever do
you
this?
You know, now it'd be like, where are you? Hello, are you okay? I'm going to call your mom.
When I was in college, we would just randomly go to our friend's house and knock on the door and see if they are around and see if they wanted to do something.
Oh, yeah.
Like, no calls, no nothing. Just like, hey, seeing if you wanted to do something.
I mean, we had I don't know if, you know, we all had, like, family answering machines where it was like the whole family just had the one answering machine. So, you know, you could get...
Oh, there's a story here.
We're all listening to the same thing, you know. So it would be like, you know, my friends would have to sometimes talk in code a little bit.
Oh, yeah. We had code for the answering machine.
Yeah. But like if my mom and or dad were home, like they're not going to let the answering machine pick up the phone if I'm not there. They write it down on a piece of paper. Sarah, Jessa called at 3 p.m. Marla called at 5 p.m., you know, and I kind of go like, okay, who am I going to call back? I just can't imagine doing something like that now. But it was very normal.
Remember, answering machines, originally a service. There were a person, and you would pay a monthly fee, and you would call the service, and the woman would just, or person would read whatever messages were left for you. And then they had the ones you could have at home, and those were tape-based. So we'd always have to go rewind the tape to listen.
Oh, and remember there was that like fun thing for a while where it was like, well, I guess it's not unlike having somebody read your voicemail, but it was like you would buy like a pack of celebrity answering machine tape.
Oh, yeah.
You used to have it, but that happened on mobiles as well.
Yeah, like, and it would always be some, just, you know, he's going to answer our answer.
But it's always a bad impersonator who does it, right?
Right.
I'm going to be Eddie Murphy. And then they'll do the, like, you know, kind of trademark laugh or whatever Eddie Murphy did.
Sort of. Eddie Murphy-esque.
Not Eddie Murphy, is it?
Sure. I guess his name's Edward. So, yeah, I have a message for you.
Today's version of that is for folks who actually still have, the dedicated GPS that they get in their car. You could buy the packs, like, you get like Samuel Jackson voice to read directions to you, or James Earl Jones or something like that. I think Gilbert Gottfried had one where he's telling you how to get from point A to point B.
Would be annoying.
It was. It's like, you know, I'm pretty sure that was one, but there were just all these, celebrities that had those distinctive voices. They would lend their voices over for voiceover to tell you to turn left.
To be fair, if James Earl Jones gave me directions, I would just follow them.
Like, I'd just do what I was told. He's a Amazon assistant name. Am I wrong? No. It's not James Earl Jones.
Lawrence Fishburne?
Not Lawrence Fishburne.
Oh, no. I know who you're talking about. You're,
not Morgan Freeman. I know that's the obvious one. There was somebody else.
Avery Brooks?
I don't know if it was.
Was it a male voice or was it a female voice?
I remembered it being a male voice. I don't know. Yeah. I don't.
There's lots of celebs
that
do this stuff.
If that kind of stuff is novelty, or if people use it a lot. Hoping for there not to be a wake word.
Was it Matthew McConaughey?
Then we're cooking with gas. I just tell you what I want.
Hey.
Feels a bit like those things you're describing feels a bit like the modern version of, or like the not modern version of Cameo, and like where that all came from.
People paying to be like, the celebrity did that thing. Instead of just a no name person is a thing that people pay for. Yeah.
Did the in-betweeners ever make it to the US?
Yes, but only on selection, like cable and like Pete. Yeah, I think only on cable.
So the guy, Jay from the in-betweeners, is basically the highest earning person on Cameo, apparently. He makes a fortune.
Really? And the in-betweeners, it's not a soap, right?
No, it was like a teen comedy thing. He had some, let me put it, this is a family show, so I can't repeat what the things people ask him to do. But he had some distinctive catchphrases, and he's just like the TV career has like made a fortune doing these catchphrases and stuff on Cameo.
Samuel L. Jackson. Joe is reminding us.
Said Sam Jackson.
Did we?
I feel like he was one of the first guests.
I think he was the second or third one. Right after it was J.E.J. first. Then I think I said Avery Brooks in there, but yeah, we said Sam Jackson.
Yeah.
Because his are great.
it's like everything is better if
Samuel L. Jackson
turn left. Expletive.
Right. Yeah.
Again.
And go to sleep.
Again, if he told me to do something, I would just follow the instructions.
Right. Yeah.
Like, you're just doing it, aren't you? If Samuel L. Jackson tells you to do something, you're obviously just doing it.
It's weird because as I think about the whole kind of writers and SAG strike, trying to get higher earnings for the work that they do, there's also suddenly a whole bunch of new avenues for, at least for the more higher profile actors and writers to kind of, you know, trade off their name and their personalities in a way that I think would be really hard pressed to do unless you got like some weird comedy special from Comedy Central or a Netflix special. You know, like you can kind of, I don't want to say nickel and dime, but you can side hustle your way into parlaying your celebrityism in a way you couldn't do before.
Go ahead, Charlotte. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No. You have to have a distinctive voice like some of the people we've been talking about, or a catchphrase.
So something that I was talking about this on another show, that you're starting to see some celebrities do in order to, because they don't have income coming in, yet they still have bills to pay. They're going to like comedy clubs, not to do stand up, but they'll literally be like a moderator and two or three. I don't want to say like the top level actors, but, you know, folks that you've definitely seen and you know who they are. And they're just talking about things that have happened to them in their careers as they're acting, not necessarily talking about the movie, but maybe talking about what happened on the set of a movie and just, you know, hilarious things. And they're filling up these clubs with, you know, 300 to 400 people who are paying tickets to come and see. Well, and I can't think of an actual celebrity who's done this, like, because I was just being told about the story. But I think that they are really thinking, it's like, you know what? I have 100,000 people who rock with me and follow me on social media. Let me figure out how to parlay that into doing something that does not have to go through
an actual,
you know,
it's
company.
Touring, yeah. You know, making money off tours.
Anthony Bourdain was doing that for a while. I mean, yeah. I remember Patrick Norton. I helped Patrick Norton score tickets to
musicians all the time. States. Either, I don't know. I mean, you have like the Taylor Swift, you know, kind of level, you know, and other entertainers who are like, I don't really want a tour. That's how you make money.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Especially when you do the signings.
Even if you're like, I packed a room of 100 people, like, it's all relative. I'd be thrilled.
Not my relatives.
Stand up and
I'd pay to see you, Sarah. I'd be there.
Well, you know, yeah. Who has been paying to, or at least supporting us to hear us speak are the folks on the Twitch chat.
Ooh, yes.
We had Technomench, PC Smiley, Moose2271, Lion Jim Video, and Zoe Brings Bacon, all cheering us on with bits. In fact, cheering us on with so many bits, we got a hype train going twice. And then Nainu and Billy Gates Mahjong and BGMNCWJ, I have no idea how to pronounce that, for resubscribing to the show once again to help support us. Thank you, one and all.
Over on the Patreon side, we know that August is sometimes kind of a slow month. People are vacationing. They're doing other things besides becoming patrons. So we will welcome you back next month. But wanted to give a thanks to Wild West Dan, who went annual. We really appreciate that. Thank you for wanting to be with us for another year and hopefully many more years to come.
And thank you all, one and all. And we'll catch you tomorrow with Chris Ashley and Lynn Peralta drawing the top tech stories.
Indeed, we will. This has been so much fun. Charlotte, Henry, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Love hanging out with you guys. Made a new friend in Rob.
What a nice meeting. Yes, it was a nice meeting. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You guys are going to be fast friends. I know it. Everybody else, have a wonderful day. Collective
Have a wonderful day. And a great internet. And if you still have a Netflix DVD subscription, try checking out some DVDs.
Yeah.
While you still can.
Or just keep the ones you have.